Hey there, it's Dean Blundell from DeanBlundell.com, the host of Brent's podcast, Brenton on Tour, the Coffee Cast, and I was just doing some light reading here on a weekend, or a weekday, depending on when you listen to this. It's absolutely live. So what day is it today? Okay, then it's live. Anyway, I was doing some reading on this day, and I saw that Brent has done 10 episodes. 10 about coffee. 10 whole episodes about coffee. And I thought to myself, my God, people will listen to anything. But when you're talking about coffee and something that's near and dear to my heart, I've listened to all 10 too. So what does that make me? Cultured, like it makes you. So thank you for listening to all 10 episodes. And what we're going to do here is have a little review of those first 10 episodes of the Coffee Cast, Brenton on Tour, right here at DeanBlundell.com. In episode 146 of the DeanBlundell.com podcast as well. Stick around and listen to the others as well. And truly, thank you for listening to Brenton on Tour's Coffee Cast about coffee. Other things, but mostly coffee.
Oh, no, thanks. I can't drink coffee late at night. It keeps me up.
First pot!
You're listening to the Brenton on Tour Coffee Cast, brought to you by things that make coffee, people who make coffee, people who love coffee, and maybe just coffee. You have no idea who he is, but he's on the search for the best coffee in the world. So pour a cup, grab a seat on the John, and maybe, just maybe, you'll stop drinking shitty coffee. It's the Brenton on Tour Coffee Cast with your host, that guy you don't know. Here's BD.
Welcome, friends, to episode 11 of the Brenton on Tour Podcast. This episode, I'm super excited about. I'm actually, it gives me an opportunity to go back and review what happened in the first 10. And I don't know if there's any other content creators on here that are going through what I'm going through on this particular case, but I often hear of people, you know, when you're interviewing people or you're going through the process of trying to put together a show. Sometimes you listen back, sometimes you don't, and you always miss something. Well, I'm finding things all over these episodes where I'm like, God, I should have asked them this, or I should have asked that. So that's been pretty cool. It's also teaching me a lesson on how to listen better, I guess. But hey, we're all growing this thing together, and we've made it to episode 11 together. And I say we, I mean you. You guys have all been along for the ride. We even cracked top three at Society and Culture and Apple last week. I mean, hey, it's a start, right? And hopefully by the end of the year, we'll be well on our way. So thank you guys for all of that. I think, having, even more than one listener per episode is, there's somebody out there listening, but we're getting into some respectable numbers now. Big thanks to all of you guys for liking, sharing it. A huge thanks to Dean Blundell and the team over there who introed me today and have hosted me from the beginning. So onwards and upwards, we're going to keep trucking away. I'm going to spend this episode talking about the first 10. So hopefully you guys can go back and review some that maybe that you've missed, or you've just joined me in the last week or so or 2 weeks. Maybe, you were Tim Wendelboe fans and, you jump over and hear a little bit from Jeremy who popped into episode 10 to ask a question, or you want to go buy the new Korn record from the guys or the new Tuke records. There's so many cool things I think about discovering a podcast where you can go back, like I do when I discover one where I'm like, well, who else have they had on? What are these, who are they interviewing and what are they doing? So welcome. If you're just joining me, welcome. And if you've been along for the ride, I thank you. That being said, the first 10 episodes, we've basically have been trucking away together, liking, sharing, doing everything we can to get it out there. And I've been challenging you to do that so you can win yourself a brand new Leverpresso from Leverpresso.com. And the time has come to give that away. Do I put everybody's name into a hat? Sure. Do I take a tally of who's liked and shared it the most and tagged me? That's an option. All of them, I think, though, are going to be close to the same result. So I've gone ahead and put that name in a new envelope And that envelope is right here. So stand by. I'm going to get it. It's right here. I'm going to ask my buddy Mike in the booth all the way in Brantford, Ontario there. Yeah, we're doing remote booths here, my friends. Mikey P, my producer extraordinaire. Cue me up a drum roll. You got one there? Cool. Here we go. The winner, my friends. Let me get this thing open here. Of the first ever Leverpresso.com contest on BrentonOnTour.com is going to... Mike Leach and family, located in Oakwood, Ontario. Michael Leach, who's been sharing and loving this thing from the beginning, taking it to work, asking me coffee questions, getting it out to all of his friends and the people that he works with, trying to keep the people of Lindsay, Ontario, caffeinated. You have won yourself the Leverpresso. How about a hand clap there? There we go. Amazing stuff. So thank you, Mike, for that and everyone else who's shared along the way. I will hopefully get some more from Leverpresso and we'll send some more out. Please don't stop sharing and liking it. But it's like any contest. There's another one coming. And I'm super stoked to announce that myself and episode 2 guest Darren Dangergreave and I have been granted media passes for Beanstalk in Vancouver this coming weekend. November the 2nd, we're going to go down. There's a huge coffee festival happening on Granville Island. We're going to go down. They've been giving us a press schedule, which is awesome. We're going to go down and check in with everybody, talk about coffee. So that's coming. We're going to film for the YouTube channel that's launching in now. I've pushed to 2020. I think that's the safe bet. I think we're going to launch out in January with the YouTube channel. And Beanstalk will be likely one of the first episodes that we launched to see about how Darren and I cruised around, taught coffee, learned about the coffee scene in Vancouver, amongst other people around the world. So thank you all for that. It is time to get to the review of the first 10 episodes. So in episode 1, it all started with my blogging and attempt at, you know, educating people about my journey around the world, trying to find the best coffee in the world. And it led me to a friend of mine who was writing and also blogging and also running DeanBlundell.com out of Toronto for Dean and had asked me to write about my journey. And so I thought, okay, cool. This could be cool. It gives me a bit of a creative outlet and I'll go ahead and put something together. So I wrote an article called Which Coffee Asshole Are You? Which was my first attempt at writing a blog. And it actually did pretty well from a response wise, because we all are coffee assholes. So I thought I would talk about it. You know, I only talked into my phone, put something together kind of quick and had some fun with it. So this is a highlight from episode 1, where I get into the kind of asshole that only drinks Tim Hortons or Starbucks and refuses to change. Here you go. And then there's, of course, these people. They only drink Tim Hortons, Starbucks, Coffee Time, or Dunkin' Donuts, refuse to drink any other kind of coffee. You can go down. Going up seems to be a more difficult journey for these people. All right, I can go, if I'm floating around and it's like all there is Tim Hortons in Glasgow. In fact, when I'm in Glasgow, Scotland, they have a Tim Hortons right downtown. I'm like, yeah, you know what? I'm going to go feel Canadian for half a day. And just as like 3 months ago, I went in there and ordered an Americano and it was terrible. I'm sorry. It was just terrible. And I don't know how you mess up an Americano, but they did in Glasgow. So I'll give it a go. I'll go down, but getting these people to move up, it's really, really tough. You know, it's 50 cents more, whatever. They got to wait in line. You know, they don't have a drive-through, quote unquote. Give me a break. Give yourself some coffee culture. Get in there. Go try it. You're an asshole for not trying it. So yeah, friends, do yourself a favor. Live a little bit. Try some new things. And don't be that coffee asshole. So in episode 2, I was joined by my good friend, Darren Grieve, who is in the sky, trying to keep citizens of Vancouver in the lower mainland safe in traffic, and tell us what's going on in the world out there to make sure that we're getting to and from work in a timely fashion. And he was also at Sea Fox for a long time in Vancouver, which is where I first met him. Him and Todd Hancock had a great afternoon show that they kept the rock flag flying. And so Darren also joined the coffee journey roughly around the same time as I did, and about a year and a half ago. And so I was curious as to how his journey was going, what he was up to, where he was taking it, you know, how it's, you know, how he's making it. Again, as I'm putting together a podcast, there's not really any rules. I sat down in a hotel, asked him a few questions, and we started chin-wagging over the idea that we're both on this together. And how are we making our coffee? What are we doing? What are the, you know, different things that we're discovering together? So Darren was great for that. As mentioned, he's joining me this weekend at Beanstalk in Vancouver, and we're going to walk around and learn what we can about local coffee and hopefully take what we've learned so far, bring it to the table, and educate you guys. So in episode 2, Darren joined me, and I was curious as to what gear he was working on. And this is what he told me.
But what are you working on gear-wise, and what would you, you know, how did you start with it? Because, you know, and where are you at now with your gear? Because I'm kind of in this hybrid zone of like organically doing it versus like machine doing it. So where are you at?
Yeah. And when I first got serious about coffee, I got a mocha pot, which is what, you know, all the Italian coffee makers, if they're not using an espresso machine, they're probably going to use the mocha pot. It's just a stovetop pot. So I started out doing that. And that's, again, a, sort of a, you know, there's no machine involved in making your cup of coffee there. That was a lot of fun. But then I started hearing about how wonderful the AeroPress was. And I heard about it for a long time, thought, well, they must be expensive if they're that good. They're like $40. You can buy them at all kinds of different places. They're just made of plastic. They're actually made so that you can make a cup of coffee when you're out camping or hiking. So they weren't, they just happened to make an amazing cup of coffee. But the idea was just for you to be able to do it out in the middle of the bush, still have a decent cup of coffee instead of having to tough out instant coffee while you're camping. So for $40, $45, this thing, I mean, you talk about those coffee contests, they have AeroPress contests around the world, and this is probably my favorite piece of, you know, my favorite coffee tool, the AeroPress. But the other one that I've been playing with the last 6 months or so is a Chemex. It's just a glass.
Had one today.
You know what I'm talking about. For people who don't know, it's what they call a pour over. So you basically pour the water into the filter, and it drips down into this big jug. That's what a pour over is. And the type I have is a Chemex, just because it looks cool. And it was designed by this dude who was actually a scientist, I believe, back in the early 1900s. So it just looks really cool sitting on the kitchen counter. That's kind of why I got that. I kind of geeked out. As it turns out, it's a lot of fun trying to make coffee on that too. But if I'm going to make espresso or cappuccino, I have a Breville machine as well that I've been playing with. So it's become a hobby. The cup of coffee is always great, but I enjoy the process of weighing out the beans on a scale and making sure the water is at the right temperature and whatever you have to do with the espresso machine. I still fuck that up all the time. Every single batch of beans I bring home, you need to grind them a different way, so you waste a bunch of cups. But it's a fun process. It keeps me out of trouble too.
So in episode 3, Todd Kearns, who plays bass with Slash, might be the biggest Seinfeld fan that I know. Next to me, I mean, anytime we're together, anytime I see him, there's a substantial amount of Seinfeld talk. And I thought he would be the perfect guest to bring on because Seinfeld had just turned 30. I wanted to change things up a little bit and talk about the best coffee scenes from the show, because the show was based on coffee. They were in a coffee shop all the time. Most of the problems that they did or solved were done through coffee. Jerry went on to actually form Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee. And, you know, it was just one of those things where who better to have on than Todd? You know, these first 10 episodes were coffee cast and coffee based. And Todd was one of those guys where I know he drinks coffee, but he's not actually a coffee head per se, like some of the other guests that I have. He just goes and drinks it. So I wanted to merge the coffee and our love of Seinfeld together to review, you know, the top scenes from Seinfeld. I thought the episode came out really funny. We had a good time chatting about it. Todd's always a gracious guest. Make sure you check out his band, Tuke, with fellow Canadian Brent Fitz, who's also on the podcast, which we'll talk about later on. And he's got he's with Slash, featuring Miles Kennedy and the Conspirators. He was in Age of Electric. He's got a solo record. It's great. He's a super talent, and I was happy to have him. So in episode 3, we started talking about our favorite Seinfeld episodes. I broke down the top 5 Seinfeld scenes, what I thought were the top 5 Seinfeld scenes. And we both came up with the conclusion that this was one of our faves. So here we go.
The best line, you know, who told you to put the bomb on? It's just, yeah. It's just oh, forget God. It.
Anything with Jackie Childs is gold. I mean, there's so many times that has happened with the smoking episode when Kramer like had a smoking lounge in his apartment, and then they tried to sue the tobacco companies. And then this time it was, he spilled hot coffee on himself, and which was a parallel and a play on the story of the person who had spilled McDonald's coffee on themselves. You remember that story?
Yeah,
and they burned themselves, and they tried to, or I don't know how successfully they sued McDonald's, but it was basically the same idea. From Java World was the coffee shop that he like, because he says, I've been drinking cafe latte since the 5th grade, and I never looked back. It's just like, you know, it's just the strangest things to say, and the fact
so is
that
this
he,
your is this your favorite episode? This
that's,
one
that's my favorite of the coffee episode, because he's so yeah. jacked up on the, you know. You can't, don't look at me when I want a cafe latte. When I want a cafe latte, I'll get a cafe latte. Just whacked out. He ends up settling on getting free coffee. It was free coffee plus, but he goes, I'll take it. He shakes his hand.
He totally messes it up. The 50,000 or.
Yeah. It was going to be like free coffee plus a cash, you know, settlement. But he just took the free coffee. And Jackie Childs, of course, has a heart attack about that. He's constantly like, he still takes Kramer's business all the time, but it always ends up in some sort of colossal failure.
What's your favorite? Like, this is your favorite. Is this your favorite episode of Seinfeld? Or is this your favorite coffee related episode of Seinfeld?
I think it's just my favorite coffee related. I mean, I have a very difficult time discussing what. There's some really amazing Seinfeld episodes because of there's the one that's backwards when they go to Susan Mishki's wedding in India. Yeah. There's a lot of those that are just brilliant. A lot of my friends that are hardcore Seinfeld fans, they kind of fall out towards the last couple seasons because it starts to get really crazy. But I actually really like some of that stuff that gets – when you start to get really far-fetched with Kenny Rogers' chicken. And
that's my favorite episode.
That's brilliant, yeah.
Absolutely my favorite episode.
That is the best.
Which they end up switching apartments.
Yeah, and they switch personalities essentially.
They switch personalities.
It was one of my favorite things whenever Jerry's sipping a coffee and he always goes, that's a shame. Whenever something's happening, his comment is always kind of, that's a shame. Because nothing really ever affects Jerry. It's always sort of – he's always sort of like completely unaffected by whatever's going around.
So that particular episode, so they spill the coffee, he gets the bomb on, he loses everything. He could have got everything. He made the bad decision, loses everything, and then he's back to square one.
And the maestro gave him the bomb, by the way. The maestro. That whole thing is insane too. Like Bob, the maestro. You go, who told you to put the bomb on? Well, the maestro. And he goes, who the hell's the maestro? Kind of thing. It's chaos.
A byproduct of what I do for a living is travel around. I run concerts for a living. I have an opportunity to visit some great coffee regions around and meet some amazing people. One of the greatest discoveries of coffee has been, I can't believe how it brings people together. It was not in my life. And here we are. With a podcast. It's just the stupidest thing in the world to me that I would be this far into coffee when it was never a part of my life. But hey, here we are. So I had the benefits of traveling with some great coffee minds and some great people and also some great musicians. And one of those musicians was Ray Legere from the band Korn. And Korn recently had a coffee brand come out. And when Ray found out that I was, making coffee, on a daily basis at the shows in my office and was discovering that I had put a podcast out, he said to me, you've got to go and talk to Jeremy Gersey, who made our coffee. So the more I researched Jeremy, the more I realized what a story this guy has. And I, I was in California and I asked him if he would come on. He said, absolutely. We actually filmed a bunch of stuff for the YouTube channel, which is going to come out soon. And it looks really, really cool. And Jeremy's story about invading Hollywood with his coffee has been one of the most talked about episodes over I had to split it up over two because we talked so long, but he is a, you know, great guy with a great story. And everyone who talks to me about listening to the podcast says to me, oh, that story about Jeremy is really, really cool. Like, I can't believe he did this or how he broke it in or, you know, did he say what Tom Cruise was like or whatever? It was really cool to kind of hear people react to Jeremy in this way because he really is a like fantastic guy that made time for me as I'm launching this thing and has a great story to tell. So we broke it up into two episodes. So in episode one, we really get into how he started and how he cracked Hollywood. So I went, you know, I wanted to find out like just how hard was it to make it? Just how hard was it to crack that, you know, secret society? And it seems like it took a lot of work, but it also seemed that like once he cracked it, he was off to the races. And this is what he had to say about it. What's the first thing that happens? You get on site and then you bring it to the masses. And this is you're making coffee for the crew, or is it just strictly for the actors?
My first contract was with the production office for the office people. They loved it. This is my first day in business. I went to the casting director's office. He hired me. He had only 8 people in his office. Then he sent me as a gift to the production office. I made about 40 drinks there. And they were like, I'm a kid at this point. I'm 19, skinny little scrawny kid. And they go, hey, kid, you know, can you come back tomorrow to the set? We're going to give you a map and we'd like you to serve these on set. So that was my first day of work. I made in 2 hours what I made the entire week working at the coffee place.
Were you charging per cup or were you just charging
per cup?
You were charging per cup.
At that point, yeah.
And so did you find that once you started with that, all of a sudden it was like, whoa, I need to add 45 people and I need to be on every movie set? Or what was the deal there?
It was pretty bizarre, actually. I ended up getting a pager like within a couple of days of starting the business. And they basically, I would be sitting in class because I'm in college at the time. And like a drug dealer, man, my pager would go off and word just spread. I didn't do anything. Somebody on Edwood knew someone on Nightmare on Elm Street Part 7, and I would get these calls. Hey, are you the kid that jacks everyone up on caffeine? We need you to come. And then what happened is I met a guy who was a big catering guy, and he said, screw this. I'm not going to have you charge per cup. I'm going to give you a flat fee. And that started the whole Netflix approach of it, where it's all you can drink. And I pioneered the all you can drink for a flat fee based on the size of the crew and stuff. And now that's pretty much the standard of coffee catering.
So then from there, it's taken off. It's crazy. You're on movie sets. It's like, did you have to add people? Was it just you? Did we have to kind of like figure out what your actual plan was going to be moving forward to sustain it? Or was it just one of those things where you just kind of going with it and the work was flowing in and you just kind of kept going with it?
You know, it was a very interesting process because it started obviously out of my parents' garage and it started with just me. My second week in business, I hired my best friend. I gave him a pager. I gave him a duplicate of everything I had, and he started to go out, and I couldn't handle all the calls, so he would start taking half my calls. And that was my second week in business. Come like a month later, it was just nonstop. It was, nobody was doing what we were doing, and it became like a phenomenon. And then what really got me like in with productions was productions would want to hire us on a Friday night. Now I'm going to give a major trade secret away here.
Be careful now. Are you sure? We can edit it out with like some kind of like a coffee sound.
So I would book up on a Friday night, and I didn't have any, like I didn't have enough employees. I didn't have enough coffee bars. And then what happened was I started to make deals with the different TV shows, whatever they were, ER, Seinfeld, Gilmore Girls. And I asked for a contract. They would all give me purchase orders and pay for me to be there once a week. And so what I did is in trade for that, I automatically gave them a spot. So I assigned somebody to their account, and I was doing 50 shows a week, like 50 film and television shows a week on average. It became so big. We would have these big silver refrigerators in our commissary, and I would have the truck from the dairy like pull up and just unload gallons and gallons of milk. Then we were roasting coffee, and it
became. Were you roasting on site?
We were roasting at our commissary. Originally, I studied roasting under a master roaster when I first launched the company, and I didn't know how to roast, and I became an apprentice, and he took me under his wing, and he kind of taught me how to taste, how to source, how to buy coffee. He was really instrumental in letting me use his credit, because I'm 19 years old, right out of high school. I didn't have credit. So I would piggyback his green coffee orders, and he would let me put bags on there. So I would get net 30 days, and that was a big help. Like I credit him for really giving me my start.
We move on to episode 5, and you know, you've heard the story, you know, he cracks it, he becomes Tom Cruise's barista, and all this cool stuff starts happening to him. But, you know, it's funny that Seinfeld would play a significant part in this podcast. It's weird. I mean, he's been featured in, you know, number 3, number 4, number 5 now, but it's just because Jeremy ended up, being on the last 3 seasons of Seinfeld, and also, you know, the Curb Your Enthusiasm and all the rest of it. And it was really, really cool to hear how he cracked that. I wanted to find out how he became Mocha Joe. And conveniently, when we confirmed Jeremy as a guest and then came on to talk about it, when I went to launch these episodes, HBO had just announced that they were coming back out with Curb Your Enthusiasm in season 10. And they were coming back with Mocha Joe. And I'm like, well, I've got Mocha Joe. Mocha Joe is my guest for 2 weeks. I've got the real Mocha Joe. So I thought it would be great for Jeremy to talk a little bit about how he got on that set and how he became the basis of Mocha Joe. So have a listen to this.
I was doing movie after movie after movie. Could not break into television with my coffee. Usually you're in TV, you can't break into film. I'm doing film after film. I did Dusk Till Dawn. I was a Men in Black, Jerry Maguire. Didn't have my children at that time. But couldn't get a break in television. And so I was in film school. That's what I studied in school. And I basically went through the credits of 2 TV shows that I knew shot on the same lot. One was a show called Hearts of Fire, which starred the late John Ritter and Billy Bob Thornton. And the other one was Seinfeld. I knew they shot on the same lot. And so what I did is, more trade secrets here.
You mean they didn't shoot in New York City? What?
No. Hollywood. Actually, Studio City. So what I did is I scanned the credits. I took the producer's name out of the credits, and I cold called the production office. I asked to speak to the producer of Hearts of Fire, and I scanned the credits of Seinfeld, and I knew I saw who the producer was of that show. And I used her name, and I randomly said, I called up this guy. He got on the phone with me. I said, hey, is this Doug Jackson? Yes, it is. I go, my name's Jeremy. I have this company, Mocha Kiss. We do all the coffee on Seinfeld. It was a complete lie. I didn't know anybody on Seinfeld. I said, yeah, Nancy Sprouse. She's the producer. She told me you would be interested. Complete BS. Was all a lie. He goes, oh, yeah, I know who Nancy is. I don't know her, but I know who she is. Well, if you're good enough for Seinfeld, we'll try you out and we'll give you a shot. And if we don't like you, we'll never use you again. So that got me on the actual film lot. And then I got on Hearts of Fire. And then what did I do? I took drinks over, found Nancy Sproul. She didn't actually drink coffee, but I gave her associates coffee. And they said, wow, if you're good enough for Hearts of Fire, we'll try you out. They tried me. And that's how I got on Seinfeld. And from there, I started to work on the writer's room, and I would actually sit in writer's meetings while they're writing episodes of Seinfeld. They literally used to open up the USA Today. Larry David was at the head of the table. You had all the writers, and I would sit there making them coffees, listening to how they write these amazing shows like Lobster Hands, The Bizarro. I mean, all these episodes that are iconic. And he used to go, hey, Mocha Joe. Because he knew I was Mocha Kiss, and he used to call me Joe. So he's put the 2 names together, and next thing you know, I'm Mocha Joe. And then he would start interacting with me on set, and then, behind the scenes. And I would be carrying a tray of coffee. He'd come and, like, you know, see me outside. What you got there, Mocha Joe? What? And he's like looking at everything. And that's how it started. And then he actually left the show in the final season. And then I went from I've worked the last three seasons of the show.
One of the coolest things that I also get to do is just when you have a podcast and you have an opportunity to create content and make things happen, you also have an opportunity to just randomly email or text people. And I was given a phone number of Dave Ellison, the bass player from Megadeth. And I was saying to myself, this is crazy because, you know, I loved Megadeth growing up and you know, loved, saw them a few times. And it was just this weirdness of like, I can't just text them. Like, you know, who am I? I'm a guy from Canada with a coffee podcast. I mean, the guy sold millions of records. He's not going to want to come on and talk per se, but the great thing is coffee brings us together. He's got his own coffee brand called Elfson Coffee. And a friend of mine in the business thought he would be great to come on and talk. And so I reached out to Dave. Dave got back to me right away and said, I'd love to come on, gave me some time. And it was great. The guy has created his own brand of coffee. He was one of the first people to create his own brand of coffee, sells it around the world. He makes brands for other bands. I couldn't thank him enough for coming on. I mean, and then he came and visited me in Phoenix, brought me his book and brought me a bag of the coffee as well. So just such a great guy and so happy to have him as part of this journey of me building this out. As I said, I couldn't like this, these first 10 guests, like what am I, you know, I might as well just quit now. I mean, this is like, for me, a dream. This is like the, you know, these 10 guests that I have to help launch this thing is a dream come true. And it's just proving that when you go and put yourself out there from a content standpoint and you try to have stories to tell to people, that you can attract all sorts of characters and people from around that are interested in what you're doing. So Dave, thanks for your time. In this episode, we get into what it was like to launch this thing from the ground up, going brick and mortar to selling it online to touring around the world and trying to find a good bean. And I asked him the question about, you know, what is next for him and what he's been up to. They make a lot of coffee for other bands, you know, so he talks a little bit about that and what it was like to launch it. So this is Dave Ellison from Megadeth in episode 6.
Thing with starting our company is we started with zero capital. You know, again, put it online, someone else was roasting it, my name is on it, first bag showed up, I made a profit, you know. So I was profitable from bag one, and that was important to me because I did not want to take my rock star money to just dump it into a coffee company and go broke, you know. So for me, it's always been about sort of managing the cash flow, managing the investment into it. And it should be fun. You know, I don't want this to be something that like keeps me up all night and I'm running around crazy. I mean, quite honestly, I did get to a certain point where it was sort of like the next probably most cost-effective method of the product chain would be for me to just buy a roasting machine and, you know, somehow talk my wife into roasting my coffee for me, you know, which I don't think she was up for that. So, yeah, I mean, we do some things like Rock and Rose. We give a small portion of the profits over to the Rose Organization, which is a breast cancer awareness organization out of Houston. We started two roasts that we're doing for the Recording Academy, which is the Grammys, which go to a portion of the proceeds go to help the Music Cares program. Which is part of their initiative over there. So it's nice to have some things that we can, you know, do to serve and give back and, you know, bolster our community. Like I say, doing the artist roasts is fun because, you know, Autograph, they do well. I mean, they buy a lot of coffee from us and then they turn around and sell it at their merch booth every night. And, you know, so they do well. I mean, it's kind of like going to a merch company and making a t-shirt for $5 and turning around selling it for 20. And it's just another way to have some cool conversational merchandise items.
Thanks again, Dave. Love the band. Can't wait to have some coffee with you down in Phoenix down the road. Episode 7. It was time for me to get a girl on the show. I mean, I'm surrounded by all sorts of people when I travel, but I wanted to really reach out and get a girl to come on and talk about coffee. And it can be a little bit more difficult than you think. And luckily, through my sponsorship of Leverpresso, it connected me with Lex Albrecht from Montreal, who's a professional cyclist for Team TIBCO and Team Canada. And we have a mutual friend who's our Olympian friend, Mercedes Nickel, up in Whistler, BC, which we didn't realize at the time until I found out a little bit later on. And it was great. So Lex has been really busy. She's one of the most active Instagram people I've seen. She's got a great fun story, a great feed, and she's always traveling with some of the best coffee and coffee products on the go. And I thought I would get her on the show to talk a little bit about her life and a little, you know, how it came together. And then she was racing George LaRocque, a former NHLer, on an F1 track for the third time coming up after. And I believe that race has happened and she won again and she beat George again. So I guess he's got some work to do. So thanks to Lex for coming on board. In episode 7, I wanted to chat with her about routine, because one of those things about being an Olympic, you know, being an athlete, I'm sure there is, unlike us that, you know, aren't as regular with our routines. She has a standard routine that she has to follow every single day in order to make her at the top of her game and be able to compete professionally. And my question to her, and we talked a great deal about her history, but we also chatted a bit about her routine. So in this episode, she kind of dove into what it's like to travel, still stay, you know, active, but, you know, not forget her morning coffee routine. And this is what she had to say about it.
It showed me, basically, we have a mutual love of the Leverpresso brand, and I found you that way just through a hashtag. It was the funniest thing. And I,
no way.
And because you use it a lot. And now you must also be the most caffeinated cyclist on the planet, I'd have to think, because what you're traveling with gear wise is some pretty, heavy stuff. It's pretty great to watch you break it out every day and show the world, you know, coffee on the go, coffee in the hotel. Anyone who travels like us who did, you know, for a living and where we go, it's always a struggle to find great coffee in a hotel, but outside of, you know, you don't always have time to just go out and explore the city. Sometimes you're just in for a day and out, or you got a full training schedule like you do, I'm sure. So being able to say travel with a great bean or great product to make your experience better, I'm sure is a godsend. So
it makes all the difference. And like I mentioned before, you know, with all the travel and being on the road all the time, there's a big sense of, I guess, instability, which can be thrilling, but it can also be kind of exhausting in a way. And when your job is to perform physically at the top level, the instability of the lifestyle and unpredictability, I guess, it can be a little bit of a challenge. So to kind of not necessarily eliminate that factor, but to kind of lower that, I try to maintain a consistent routine regardless of where I am in the world. And the one thing that I can maintain is to start my day off with an amazing coffee. So that's why I travel with this really cool coffee gear. It's just so that I know that regardless of where I am, I'm going to have my little coffee routine in the morning. You know, I grind my beans with a hand grinder, not just to have the freshly ground beans, which makes all the difference, but just because, you know, it's part of the ritual, I guess. And then it's so much fun to play with the different gadgets that I have. So like you mentioned, the Leverpresso, I use like AeroPress. I have different accessories for my AeroPress too. I have a plug-in mocha pot. I do pour overs. I have like these foldable paper pour over filters that are from Japan, actually, that are really, really cool. Or I have, you know, plastic and glass ones. I have so many coffee gadgets. And I love playing with them and trying them out and just tweaking my methods of brewing coffee. And, you know, I just enjoy having that little session of me time in the morning, having my coffee. And yet then, you know, I'm ready for whatever the day throws at me.
Thanks, Lex. So much fun to have you on. Can't wait to have coffee with you in Montreal. If I go to all the places where these guests are from, my coffee tour will take me to loads of other places. So hopefully we'll meet down the road, and we'll have you back on down the road when we circle back around to talk about coffee. And good luck with Lex versus LaRock in, you know, part four, which maybe he's too chicken to do this time, but we'll see. So we get into a good friend of mine, Brent Fitz. I've known for a long, long, long time. Plays drums with Slash. Plays with Tuke with Todd, who was my episode three guest, and has a storied history in the music business, but also was the first real major coffee head that I met. Brent Fitz was coffee crazy. One of the first things I ever discovered about him before I even drank coffee. So I at that point didn't understand it, but I do now, of course. And it turns out Brent and Ray from Korn were great old friends that had met in LA years and years and years ago. This episode was fun for me because it was like bringing two brothers back together that hadn't seen each other in 3 years or something. They've been out on the, you know, touring and crossing over wherever they could, but not really having any time. So luckily for you listeners, I don't speak much in that episode. That's why you're getting it all now. I got a chance to ask a few questions, but those two had a great chat. It was like listening to two brothers catch up over time. And it was a fun episode for me to listen back to. And everyone that's listening to it is like, this is great. And anyone that was tuning in to hear Drummer Talk was not, was sadly very disappointed because we spent all the time on coffee. So we talked for an hour. I was in Jacksonville. Ray was in Franklin and Tennessee. And Brent was in Vegas. And we put our heads together to come up with a bit of a coffee chat and about their tour around the world, doing it as well. And so they got a little bit into their coffee routine, and this is what they had to say.
Maybe I'm crazy, but I'll drink a Turkish coffee at like 10 at night and deal with the consequences.
Okay. You're nuts. Cause I'm a mass insomnia. I have really bad insomnia. So, and I don't know if it's the caffeine or what, I just don't sleep, or I sleep in like 1 or 2 hour increments and I get up and it's really annoying lifestyle, but that's, so I try not to drink coffee past 6, just in case that's part of the culprit.
Unless you walk past my office, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You walk past my office. It's like, you ever see that? It's like that scene, like you walk past the office and then you kind of go, you walk past and then like, 8 seconds later, you kind of walk back and then peek in going, what's going on in here? And then I'm like, all right, I guess I'm breaking the lever press. So out, and here we go.
It never fails too. Donnelly's always like, every time I pass your office, it's always like, no matter what, morning, noon or night, you know, it's like, you're like, hey, Ray, hey, have you tried this one? Check this out. Hey, check this. And it's like, you'll be like in the middle of doing all this business corporate stuff. And all of a sudden it's like, no. This is really important, this bean right here. Check out what I'm doing. And you should explain what you made with the cup thing in catering. What the heck was that all about? You know what I'm talking about?
I was traveling with the Leverpresso. I was making like the portable espressos. I also had an AeroPress I'm traveling with.
Yeah.
Which I was making. I think that's what you're referring to. So Fitzy knows about the Tim Wendelbo place in Oslo, Norway, which is renowned as like the top AeroPress cafe in the world.
Which I recently got to attend and go to, thanks to Brent Donnelly.
It's the best. Which, this is the insanity, by the way, Fitz, because you were the coffee guy, but here we are directing you around the world. But it's the AeroPress, which is, you know, basically people feel it's one of the things that makes one of the best coffees in the world. And you can make it any style. I learned how to make an espresso inside of it. With one of those old spice jars I was experimenting around. But one of the first days that we had a new shipment of Korn coffee, and I think it was in West Palm, Florida, actually, Ray.
Yeah.
I actually was making the Korn coffee with the AeroPress. And so Ray was just sitting down visiting with his friends and whatever it was. And I was just kept dropping cups of coffee in front of him.
So good.
So I don't know if you had a click track going that night, but I'm pretty sure you blew it out. We just kept blowing coffee out, like, you know, just giving him coffee all, you know, just try this one and try this one. And
yeah.
And then like, you know, Head would come over and he'd be like, what are you doing? I'm like, well, I'm making AeroPress. He's like, oh, if I loved coffee, I'd have some, but just give it to Ray. So yeah. I gave it to Ray. So Ray just kept getting the AeroPress all the time. And
And it was just a funny gag. And then it would suck because, you know, if I had actual work to do, I'd be in the process of making the AeroPress. And then, oh, can I have one? Oh, can I have one? And then it just started.
Yeah.
You know,
I still don't get the whole thing of people that don't like coffee at all. Or like, I don't really understand it. But then again, that's everyone's got their own taste. And I'm one of those weirdos that's never done a drug in my life. I never really got that either. So,
Me too, Ray. You know, hey. I maybe we're rare, but the thing is, coffee is promoting good rock and roll because it's a positive stimulant. And to me, it's like, you know, you want to have an exciting rock and roll concert. And to me, having a coffee before a show is a perfectly good excuse to have a good show. I make sure I have a coffee.
Don't do drugs, kids. Just drink coffee.
Episode 9. One of the things that I was trying to keep rolling through on everybody, if you go back and listen, you know, I tried to tie everything back to the first episode where I asked everybody which kind of coffee asshole they were. And some gave, you know, some gave very, very specific answers, and some decided they weren't. Some thought that they were a certain kind. It was so much fun to kind of watch or listen to that. And in episode 9, as we were winding down my chat with Brent Ray in part 2 there, we got into which kind of coffee asshole they were. And it's a delicate question for some, because in essence, you're calling them an asshole, but we all know that we're all a coffee asshole in some capacity, which we touch on. So basically I've asked them the question. They kind of went back and forth a bit about it. But inevitably they both are. And this is what they had to say.
Which coffee asshole are you? Are you the coffee snob? Or are you just like, what would you deem yourself as a coffee connoisseur? An asshole? What kind of asshole do you think you are?
Go ahead, Fitz.
Well, I will say this only because when I look back at all the years of enjoying coffee, I started drinking instant coffee and I graduated to brewed coffee but lots of milk and lots of sugar. And then when Starbucks showed up in my life, I was still drinking, latte'd sugary drinks. And then, fast forward to many years later and I'm drinking espresso and little cortados with no sugar and enjoying, coffee for its purity. But when I go over the border to Canada, to my homeland, I'm sorry, but I turn into like, it just gets dumbed down and I have to order. And I'm sadly, I'll be promoting Tim Hortons Double Double because it's a brewed coffee full of milk and sugar. And I just can't not drink it. And
my mom will be a big proponent of what you just said. So
yeah. And it's bad because, there's so many great coffee shops, but I'm okay with it. So I'm not a snob. I enjoy coffee. So I enjoy as many great, proper drinks with good beans and everything, but I'll also enjoy coffee in its form that it got me to where I am today, which is, some milk and sugar. Not very often, but I do slip and I'll have that. So I don't think that's a snob.
No, Ray, does that mean that you go to Dunkin' Donuts or are you kind of like, nah, man?
You know what? Because of my wife, my wife loves it. She'll go get an iced coffee at Dunkin' Donuts. I'm like, what are you doing? She's like, try this. I'm like, you know what? It's not that bad. So every once in a while, I will get a dark roast at Dunkin' Donuts in the airport.
It's everyone's individual thing. So it doesn't really matter where they get it as long as they're drinking it, which is the key thing here.
And I'm not by any means a snob. I'm kind of like Fitz. I don't really, I will go back and I love good, great coffee. Trust me. Like I will search long and high for it, but there's sometimes you just need to have it.
Thanks, fellas. Two of the best drummers in the world doing great things. Check out Korn's new record. Check out the new Tuke record. Check the new KXM record out from Ray. Check the Slash featuring Miles Kennedy and the Conspirator records. Busy, busy guys doing great things. If you have an opportunity to see them or meet them sometime, bring up coffee and settle in. Because they have a lot to say about it. Great guys. Thanks you. Thanks to both of them for coming on. It was awesome. So we culminate in episode 10. I like to use this episode as maybe a little bit of like everything that I had learned up to this point about coffee, but I had one of the foremost coffee professionals in the world on, Tim Wendelbo from Oslo, Norway, who has my favorite coffee in the world, and is also has one of my favorite cafes in the world. It's an AeroPress cafe. It's amazing. Tim is was one of the most requested guests once I started going down the coffee path, and I started going in and filming for YouTube in these different coffee shops around North America and the world. People were asking me, oh, you got to make sure you get Tim Wendelbo on. Literally, like almost every single cafe I went into was saying, you got to try to get Tim Wendelbo. So part of that was, I'm a little bit like reluctant to have, you know, to dive fully into the coffee conversation with Tim, because A, it happens to him every single day, and I'm sure he's sick of it. And I'm sure there's roasters and super pros in this business that have real like hardcore questions for him. So I went about it in a bit of a different approach, and I wanted to have a casual conversation with Tim about the coffee business, and ask him a few questions that I had on my end from what I'd learned so far. And then I had some friends join me from Flamingo in Jacksonville, and Jeremy Gersey jumped back on to ask a few questions from a roasting standpoint. So that was a blast. Tim was gracious enough to give me a lot of time, and we did an hour, but I'm sure we could have kept going. But thanks again, Tim. I can't thank you enough for that. And one of the issues that was really important for me to cover off, which I thought Tim could answer the best out of anybody that I've spoken to around the world at this point, was what is happening in the coffee business, because it is a bit controversial right now. There are people taking advantage of women and children and kids that, you know, are having to go into the fields and work for next to nothing, because the price on coffee is so low, and, you know, farmers are overrun with coffee and having to just get it out, and it's putting the business into a bad spot. So Tim formed or joined a coalition called The Pledge, which, you know, brought some awareness to people about where they're getting their coffee from, pledging to set the price that these guys pay, as well as show you what they're paying per pound. So it's important that you guys listen back to that episode if you have some questions about how the coffee business works. And if you really want to support the business properly, finding out what your favorite roaster is paying per pound and trying to support people that are doing paying fair. So, you know, people are being paid fair and not being taken advantage of. So Tim had this to say about it in episode 10. What's your take on what's happening with, there's a lot of controversies in the coffee business right now with the way people are being worked, or, you know, where people are getting their beans from. And sometimes there's women and children involved that are working long hours all days and for little pay. Yeah. What is your take on that? I mean, how are you trying to combat that with the way that your method, you know, your method of finding your beans and being conscious of trying to find the best farmers that are doing the best for the city environments? Like, what's your take on that side of the business right now?
Well, this is something that I probably speak about this every day, actually, because there's a lot of, I would say, misinformation in our industry, and a lot of people claiming things that might not be exactly true. But because I'm staying on a farm for at least 3 months a year in Colombia, because I own my own farm, I bought a piece of land from a farmer that I buy coffee from, and I spent 3 months a year there farming or working on my farm myself. So I stay in his house, and I get to talk to Elias a lot. He is telling me stories, and, you know, I can see what people are doing in the Colombian market, at least the buyers, some of them claiming that they're, you know, paying very good prices, but when it all comes down to it, it's, you know, not sustainable for the farmers to sell the coffees for those prices, even though they're higher than the market price. So one of the issues in coffee is that most people are looking to the international coffee exchange, or the ICE price, or the market price for commodity coffee, which is today around $1 per pound of green coffee. And The production cost is more often than not higher than $1 per pound for a farmer. So that means the farmers are losing money when they produce coffee. So before we even can start talking about, you know, paying the workers better and so on, we have to start paying more for the coffee. And the problem is that in specialty coffee, people still compare themselves to the market price of commodity coffee. But to produce good coffee, you need to take more care. You need to pay the pickers more to pick only ripe coffee cherries. You need to be more kind of hands-on with the process and drying and storage and milling. So it costs a lot more to produce that coffee than the normal commodity coffee that you'll typically find in the supermarkets. So if, for instance, a roaster say, you know, I'm a specialty roaster and I pay 20% above market price. And if they're referring to the C market, then that means they're still not paying for production costs. So fortunately, there's someone doing something about that today. And there's a group of roasters who, including myself, who have signed something called the pledge, where we kind of are obliged to publish the prices that we're paying for our coffees and how much we're buying and so on. And based on this kind of numbers, we can start to establish what is actually a market price for good coffees. And then maybe that's, you know, $3 or $3.50. And then if you're paying lower than that, you're actually paying below market price and not above market price, which would normally be the thing.
So when they're paying below market prices, that puts the onus on the farmer to, you know, pay less to the workers, correct?
Yeah, of course. I mean, the one thing is for sure in coffee, and that is the farmer is the only person in this kind of chain that is not making money at the moment. And of course, there are many exceptions, and we are paying good prices, and there are also many other roasters paying good prices for the coffee. And the reason why I'm doing it is not out of charity. It's because they are my suppliers, and I see them as kind of an extension of my team here in Norway. So if I'm not paying them well, they're not going to produce, you know, coffee for me. And I've also been working with more or less the same farmers since 2009. And, you know, it's a long-term project that we have together in order to improve the quality of the coffee on their farm. And we're working together. It's not like I'm going down there and dictating them what to do. I'm visiting them. We're discussing new ideas. And also new kind of investment projects for the farms in order for them to improve the quality of the coffee. And as long as they're kind of determined to do that, I'm determined to buy the coffee for a good price, and they know that. So we don't have a contract written or anything. We're more or less friends, and it's a gentleman's agreement. They know that I'm going to buy X amount of bags of coffee every year, and when they know that, they can also invest in the farm and also in the processes that I am requiring them to do in order to be able to sell the coffee to me.
So there it is, my friends, 10 episodes on coffee. I never thought it would be possible to actually be able to pull something together like this with the guests that I had. I mean, geez, super celebs and people like that start podcasts, get all these high end guests. I'm just little old me in a hotel most days and was able to pull this off with these 10. I couldn't be happier. Thanks to everybody who's appeared. Thanks to everyone who's liked, shared. Thanks to Dean Blundell and his team for hosting me. Thanks to Mikey P for being my producer and putting this thing together for me on a weekly basis. Also a huge thanks to my neighbor Matt for the use of the island in his kitchen. The baby was sleeping. He brought out the editing software. We compiled 11 clips, had some fun, drank some coffee. So thanks, man. Huge props. And congrats to Mike Leach and family for winning the Leverpresso. That being said, here we are. We got to keep pressing ahead. And I am going to switch gears for the next 10 episodes. And we're going to switch to music. A love of mine makes up my whole life, basically. It's my life. It's how I make my money. It's how I live. And I travel around the world running concerts, which has led to all this cool stuff like making coffee podcasts. But I want to change things up a little bit. I want to be educational in that world as well. So hopefully you guys learned a few things about the coffee world. I'm going to circle back to it, but for now, the next 10 will be music. Then I'm going to take it to travel, and then we're going to do a bit of a life cast with some great people that are doing great things around the world. and then we're going to come back to coffee. By that time, YouTube will be up and running, and we'll have a pretty decent awareness of the Brenton on Tour podcast, which has crept up, as I said, to cracking the number 3 on Apple, and we want to keep those kind of numbers rolling. So hopefully you'll like and share and keep listening, my friends. So thank you so much for joining me on episode 11. Episode 12 switches to music, and it's coming shortly. Like, share. I'll find something to give away next. Thanks, friends. Until next week.
Hi, I'm Mercedes Nickel, 4-time Winter Olympian and host of Dropping In, a podcast with Mercedes. This is a podcast where I interview a bunch of different people. I get the good, the bad, and the ugly, as well as I share my stories along the way. Now you can drop in at droppingin.com or subscribe on Apple, Spotify, and YouTube. I'll see you soon.
It is your favorite girl. That's right. It's the Allie Mars, the one and the only. Everyone else just ain't me. I am the host of Welcome to Mars, a lifestyle podcast where nothing is off the table. I have come a long way from sex and dating and have transformed the new vibe to all things lifestyle. We still talk sex, but I'm more interested in the journey, where people have come from, how they made it, and where they're going. Subscribe or follow to a brand new look and a brand new era. Welcome to Mars.
Subscribe or follow on Apple, Spotify, Google, or at theallymars.com.
Because even with the new look, I'm still that same bitch you love to hate.